The Conversation Hour with John Fain on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
11:05 and welcome to a very special Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria digital radio and streaming on the internet as well at abc.net.au/Melbourne. Live music from Paul Kelly as well as the entrepreneur Michael Chugg, music promoter and manager, whose much and heavily legaled book about his career and his life. Hey, you in the black t-shirt. That's what he's called it. He's going to join us as well. It's a book that Michael says could only have been produced after he spent a fortune on the lawyers, and you'll find out why when Chuggy joins us as well as Paul Kelly. My co-host for this journey, the comedian Tony Martin, who is, again, back on your television on the ABC tonight. Good morning to you, Tony.
Good morning, John.
What are you doing on the telly?
It's called A Quiet Word with Bill Bailey, and it's going out at 10:05, not at 10 o'clock. You'll be a fool to yourself if you switch in at 10 expecting it, because it's 10:05. I've been told to emphasise this.
Mm-hmm.
There it is. I think it's underlined.
Yeah, 10:05, not 10:05, 10:05. No. Not 5:02, but 10:05.
That's right. It's just me nattering on with Bill Bailey, comedian Bill Bailey. You might have seen him on Black Books.
We've had him on the Conversation Hour,
He's great. 26 minutes worth of nonsense.
He's a very engaging and entertaining man.
That's right. And because I'm wearing glasses, it's the ABC, people assume that it's some kind of Andrew Denton. It's like I'm Sha-na-na, the Sha-na-na version of Andrew Denton. But it's not that at all. It's an attempt to not make it an interview, make it like this show, John, just a conversation, veering off onto bizarre tangents wherever possible.
Which Mr. Bailey does rather well.
He loves a tangent,
He's very tangential.
It doesn't take much to get him talking about old Rick Wakeman album covers, as you'll discover. I think we spend 3 minutes of the show talking about how many Andre Rieu DVDs there are in the shops.
Does this come with some sort of parental warning or parental guidance, you two together?
I think it got a G rating. I was quite surprised about that because Bill Bailey...
Surprised or disappointed?
I've been a fan of Bill Bailey for 16 years. I've never noticed that he doesn't use any foul language whatsoever. He's one of the few comedians that my mother would be impressed by.
He's a mean hand on the piano too.
Oh, he can play any number of instruments, theremin.
Including upside down.
Really?
Yeah. Ever seen that Black Books? Is it Black Books?
Oh,
yes. The episode where he's upside down trapped in the piano?
That's right. For a whole episode. That's right. There's quite a lot of... Tonight we talk about how Black Books came about and how Bill got into comedy, but it's really the veering off into irrelevant asides. I think we spent a couple of minutes talking about the bloke who replaced Dave in Chaz and Dave. Neither of us were sure whether his name is Dave. Really, you'd have to be, wouldn't you?
You'd like to think so. Hey, how much did you have to pay the ABC to get this gig?
Well, it is literally the cheapest show on the ABC. It might be even cheaper than Gardening Australia. I've been working on Librarians doing post-production. I think Gardening Australia is getting very up itself following the departure of Mr. Cundall. There's flashpots, smoke bombs, musical numbers. It's going like Glee.
Oh.
We're nothing like that. We can't even afford to throw to a clip. I can't even afford to hold up a photograph on this show. So what I've done tonight is I've brought in my box of flyers, because I have a box at home of something like 1,200 flyers and theatre programs, because I've kept every program, every flyer for all but four shows, including every pub night of comedy I've ever seen since 1979, going right back to Dick Emery, live at the Founders Theatre in Hamilton, New Zealand, 1979.
Chronological or alphabetical order?
I've not actually put them into any sort of order. But
I don't believe that for an instant.
I brought them into for the interview with Bill, and I just kept producing. You'll see tonight, I think I produced a flyer at one point for a show he was in Edinburgh in 1991 that he can't even remember doing.
That's not surprising, mind you.
No.
But you see, you could put this out to tender and you might actually find that there are other people who are prepared to pay more than you did for the chance to sit with Bill Bailey and have their chat with Bill Bailey put to air.
Oh, really? Well, it's interesting because when it goes to air tonight, finally people will realise that it's a real show, because I've had a problem getting guests because I'm just going, I've got this show. You haven't heard of it, hasn't been to air yet, but I assure you I do have a show. Please put that phone down.
And agree to put your internationally famous talent in my hands for the purpose of a conversation.
Correct. But yeah, it's just exactly a conversation, natter.
I wish you all the best with it because, look,
thank you.
When you think about it, we've brought back from the old inventors the new inventors.
Oh, right.
Q&A is a reinvention of Monday conference with Bob Moore.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Collectors had to be reincarnated
as
well.
Of course, that's right.
We can probably go through and find some more examples of TV shows that were taken away and now are being brought back because they basically never should have gone away.
There's just, I never, with the ABC, you look through the guide, Dimension, Compass, Catalyst, I never know what anything is.
No, but it's just there's these formats that are proven over time, no matter how they're done or who's doing them, they need to be on TV in one form or another. And long, circuitous conversations between two funny people drawing the best out of each other is just something that needs to be on TV.
So you're saying this is a I'd like to think that this is a reinvention of the 1970s Australian chat show Vi's Pad with Vi Greenhalf. I'm sure there'd be some of your listeners out there would know what I'm talking about. There was a show called Vi's Pad on television for a number of years.
Ill-advised.
Possibly.
I'm trying to think of what the... there's a Martin equivalent, probably.
Well, we'll think of something.
A Martin's a small little tree creature too, isn't it?
Is it? Is it really?
Yeah.
I should know that.
You should, if anybody does. A Quiet Word with Bill Bailey with Tony Martin.
Yes.
Your host, co-host today on The Conversation Hour, but Tony Martin hosting A Quiet Word with... ..
There will
tonight,
be.
Bill Bailey.
Yep, others.
At 10:05 on ABC TV and... the others.
There'll be five more across the course of the next year. It's a very, very irregular program. It's part of Artscape because you never know what Artscape is going to be. Could be anything.
So have you got kind of like a wish list you submit?
I have. They really have to be here. They have to come to Melbourne to be on the show. But Mike Nichols is who I would love to talk to.
Right.
The idea is to try and get people who haven't been interviewed to death.
Yeah.
Like, Billy Connolly's coming. Someone said he's going to do Billy. I'm going, I could not think of a question. He's been on his wife's show, but she's like a psychotherapist. There is nothing really more to ask Billy Connolly, is there?
But he is the gift that keeps on giving. He's the magic pudding of comedy. You know,
sure.
No matter how much you take out, there's always more there.
Yeah, well, possibly. But I'm trying to just find people where you go, I don't think I've maybe seen an interview with that person.
Yeah, so it's something extra.
Yeah.
Congratulations, and it's good to have you back on the telly as well. Tony Martin tonight on the television on ABC TV 1 at 10:05. We have two legends of the music scene joining us on The Conversation Hour today. One of them is here to both talk and sing. Paul Kelly has put together a kind of personal history of his own songs. It's called How to Make Gravy, and he's offered and volunteered to perform for us live on The Conversation Hour today. Paul, welcome back to The Conversation Hour.
Thanks for having me back, John.
Well, wonderful. Hi, wonderful to have you here. And I'm in the...
How thick's that book?
So
look at it. That's like a proper book.
How many pages is it, Paul? It's 600 nearly?
570-something.
Yeah. How long index. Did that take?
It took 2 years to write.
And what was your... tell me your writing schedule. What was your... You get up straight into the... to the books, yeah?
A cup of coffee. Yeah.
How many?
Always have a cup of coffee first thing.
Yeah.
And then another one of, you know, 11s.
And are you a morning writer? Did you write? Because most of your posh novelists will get up, crack a door and be finished by 1:30. That's what you normally
do. Yeah, I'll leisurely start, you know, like probably wouldn't start writing until about 9 or 10.
Oh, right.
And then I'll try to write 500 words a day.
500
words a day.
That was
my target. Wow. Not too many.
Well, there's stories that come from your heart, and they're the stories of the songs that you've contributed to us over a career now that goes on for I don't know how long. And I am in the embarrassing position of having made a request, but a request with a reason. I asked when we were discussing what song you might sing, I said, well, could you sing Before Too Long? And the reason was, as I was reading the book, I discovered that that's the first song of your own that you heard on the radio. Whilst you were driving in a car from Sydney to Melbourne, after a gig, driving back, and you heard your own music for the first time on the radio. It's a lovely story. What feeling did you have, and can you still capture from that moment?
Yeah, I still remember the feeling, and it was great that it was shared with all the band. We were all together when it happened. You know, we'd heard the song before. When you record the song, you hear it a million times in the playback coming through the speakers and all that, but to actually sort of hear it in a pub, you know, hearing it in a public space, it's coming out of a radio. We were just in a car, but it was like suddenly this song was coming, not from us, but at us. And, you know, it was just fantastic. We just all just jumped up and started hooping and hollering, and we started singing along, turned the radio way up, you know, drank more beer.
But hang on, you'd had a lot of records out before then, really? It was Before Too Long was the first one you heard on the radio?
I remember Billy Baxter got some radio play when it came out, but I never heard it.
Right.
People told me.
Right.
I heard your song on the radio, but I never heard it. And, yeah, so that was Post was the record before Gossip, which Before Too Long came from. That never really got played in the radio. So,
really?
Before Too Long was, that was the one. And then we heard it a lot after that. You know, it was sort of, it got played a lot. So that was the one that sticks in my mind.
Did it start to feel as if this music caper was all a bit real from that moment on?
I was committed anyway. I mean, it was pretty real for quite a few years before that, but that just made things a whole lot easier, you know? Mm. Money changes everything. I agree with Cyndi Lauper. That really helped.
The school of Cyndi Lauper. Well, we've got you all kitted up here with the mouth organ and the guitar, so how about we chat some more and hear many more stories, I'm sure, from Paul Kelly. Tony Martin, my co-host, his Quiet Word with Bill Bailey, airs tonight at 10:05 on ABC TV, and Paul Kelly will chat some more about his new book, and I might say a boxed collection of Paul Kelly music, which is coming out. How to Make Gravy is the title to it all. But this is the song that Paul Kelly first heard of his own on the radio.
Another reason I'm glad you chose that song is that it's a song that represents for me Steve Connolly, who played guitar with me for 7 years and taught me a lot about arrangements, concision, songwriting. He was someone that was really pushed the band to keep arrangements, cut the fat out of arrangements. And he had this great thing about wasn't one of those shredder guitar players, didn't like to play a lot of notes. He took a solo. He would sort of take the melody of the song and maybe just bend it a little, but he basically would honour the melody of the song. So Steve died in 1995, and of course I've been playing the song ever since, so every time I play this song, I think of him. And today, I'm here on my own, I'm going to have to do the harmonica solo. And so I always sort of, Steve was also very picky if he got things wrong, so it's always a bit scary. I always think of him up there and get it right. It's very hard just to hit the first note of it, but if I get the first note, I should be away. Before too long, the one that's loving, wish that he'd never met you. Before too long, he who is nothing suddenly come into view. Let the time keep rolling on, it's on my side. Lonely nights will soon be gone, high is the tide. Before too long, we'll be together, no one will tear us apart. Before too long, the words will be spoken, I know all the action by heart. As the night time follows day, I'm closing in. Every dog will have his day, any dog can win. Shut the shade, do not fear anymore. Here I come, creeping round your back be repeating what's happened before in my mind. Before too long, over and over, just like a hammer inside. As the night time follows day, I'm closing in. Every dog will have his day, any dog can win.
before too long. Before too long.
Fabulous, Paul, and thank you ever so much. Paul Kelly with Before Too Long, which is but one of the many classics, the stories of which are told in this extraordinary new book, How to Make Gravy. Paul Kelly, Michael Chugg joining us later as well. Tony Martin, my co-host on 774 ABC Melbourne, ABC Victoria, digital radio and streaming on the internet. It's 21 past 11. On The Conversation Hour, coming up to 22 minutes past 11, Paul Kelly with Tony Martin in the studio with me here on The Conversation Hour. I'm John Fain. Paul, it's not all absolutely wonderful, according to the book. There are nights like the Mittagong RSL in 1985.
Thankfully, those nights are further and further between now, but that was the start of a tour. We'd had a mate... mate of the bass player, we were using his PA, and we went to the setup in the afternoon for the sound check, and I just walked in there and we could just see spaghetti all over the floor, leads and cables and nothing set up. So we went out the back to the, I think probably had a schnitzel or something out the back in the bistro, and came back and there was still wasn't ready. It wasn't ready when we were supposed to go on. Those are the day, that's probably, you know, the days when the support act was usually disco. And the
lucky man,
the DJ was on, and he was pumping away with Keep Your Eyes on the Road, The Doors, and the people were on the dance floor, and we went past the time we were supposed to play, and the DJ started making snide remarks about the band getting on sometime before Christmas. Eventually we got on, and it was just sounding horrendous. The foldback was like muddy and sharp at the same time. I don't know how that's possible, but it was. It was squealing. We were trying to sing our songs and it kept getting these savage spikes of feedback. And we were just dying. It was the place fitted about 500 and there's only 60 people in the place. And they're all way, way back at the bar. And we were all dying up there. Eventually one... girl came from, detached herself from the knot of drinkers at the back and walked all the way to the front of the stage and beckoned to Steve Connolly and in the middle of the song, but, you know, he waited till we got to the end of the song, and I thought to myself, at least, you know, one person likes it. And Steve bent down to hear what she had to say, and she said, "I'm going now, me and my friends are going, but I just wanted to say before we left that you're the worst band we've ever seen or heard."
Just want to get that on the record.
Yeah.
In case you were wondering. The book contains so many stories, and the structure of the book is that you go through and we get the lyrics of the song, and then we get a story about how the song was created or a memory that it invokes for you, like that little anecdote there. But in the middle of it, I stumble on, and I might say this is a 600-page book. It is just massive. It's like a Paul Kelly encyclopedia. 9 simple tips on how to write the perfect less than 3-minute pop song by Paul Kelly.
Well, that's handy.
It's not me giving the lesson. It's the Loving Spoonful. So
giving away trade secrets.
Summer
here.
In the City. Yeah, I just think that's I've always sort of loved that song, and I was thinking about this song when I wanted to write about it for the book, and so I also went to analyse it, and you realise it's just over 2 minutes. So
right.
It's got all these parts. It's a mini symphony. It's just got all these fantastic elements. So all the things that I've talked about before with Steve Connolly talking about concision, just for me that's something to aim for in a pop song. There's even like a symphony concrete in the middle with
know,
sound effects. And if it got in the library, I'd fire it up right now and you can hear what I'm talking about.
Oh, I think many of us are running it through our heads. but you kind of have... You've come to define a distinctly Australian form of music in a way that not many others have succeeded in doing. I mean, you've blended not just the kind of rock and pop sensibilities, but dare I say it, a little bit of country, and it's not exactly the Slim Dusty heritage. And I'm not sure that, you know, it's not country and western, but it's country and city or something else of its own. And I wonder if it's deliberate or just something that's happened.
I think it's, you know, it's part of, certainly not something I've done alone. I mean, when I was sort of first writing songs seriously in the early, late 70s, early 80s, the bands that were the main influences on me were Australian bands, you know, the Go-Betweens and the Triffids, the Laughing Clowns and the Saints, the Hoodoo Gurus. And they had all those things that you talked about. There was, especially, you know, with the Go-Betweens, when I first heard Cattle and Kane, that was, you know, had so much.
Yeah, wow.
Had that space, you know, sort of where, I thought, where does this come from? You know, it didn't sound American, didn't sound English. It sort of sounded Australian, but then it sort of, it was, you know, it was evocative. It was sort of arty. It had space in it. Or a song like The Triffids, The Wide Open Road. I mean, you know, they just sound like, they sound Australian. I don't even know why, but, you know, that's was happening for a while, and I studied those bands, and I loved to see them play.
Well, I used to work on a radio station that had a giant winged demon with a guitar for a logo, and I think
let me see.
Well, it was called Eon, in fact, in those days, and I think the first song that was really thrashed of yours on our station was To Her Door, which I remember was on Countdown. And there was a video clip for that. And yeah. I always remember thinking, will Paul Kelly ever have to pay to ride in his silver top taxi ever again in his life? Do you find you just have like a gold key that opens the door of any silver top?
You know, I don't think I've once been let off the taxi ride.
Really?
Yeah. I've had a taxi driver's comment on it. And there's a chapter in the book talking about my ride with a taxi driver.
Agamemnon.
Yeah,
precisely that story about the silver top and Agamemnon.
Yeah, but you know, we had a great conversation, so he charged me the full quid. I gave him a tip.
So you can't just like whip out the guitar and go, you don't remember this? In a silver top. And that doesn't cut any.
I think I'd just rather pay the $60.
Okay.
See, that's the commercial radio disease infecting you, Tony Martin. It's still in your bloodstream.
Oh, look,
no such thing as a free cab ride.
No.
Not fair to the driver for a start, even if it was.
No, I've had my blood replaced since leaving the station, but yes, there you go, still.
There's absolutely no escaping it. But is it a bit self-conscious also, I suppose, Paul? I mean, the book is full of little pearls of wisdom from you and observations, and it's almost as if you're at a point in your career and maybe even your life where you're reflecting and passing on. Is there a bit of that, passing on of wisdom from Paul Kelly?
You know, I'm from the Woody Allen school. I don't think you get wiser as you get older. I mean, the aging process, I'm against it. But when I started doing these A to Z shows, which was 6 years ago, it was a time when I was putting all my songs together, and they were all jumbled up from songs that were 30 years old to songs that were just very, very recent. So I don't know whether that, I think that sort of opened up writing the book, but it's not pearls of wisdom. It's just sort of pointing people to the things I love, and that's I was conscious of, you know, writing a book, and I didn't realize it was going to be an autobiography until some way in I realized, oh, this is a memoir. So at that point you sort of have to honor that, and you get a little bit self-conscious about it, and very self-conscious about the I. You know, you don't want to write an autobiography and bore people with I, me all the time. So I was conscious of that.
Nothing boring, I can assure you, and you're faithful to the quote from Jean-Luc Godard that you've got on the front piece, which is a story should have a beginning, a middle and an end, but not necessarily in that order. And it's a book you can just dip into anywhere. Michael Chugg's going to come in and join us in just a moment. And in fact, he comes in for a few mentions in your book, as do you in his.
Uh-huh.
So we'll get you chatting to each other in just a moment. Paul Kelly, How to Make Gravy is this massive, nearly 600-page book full of Paul Kelly lyrics and the stories that go with them that illustrate this extraordinary and such a rich career. And there's some photos in there, amongst others, of Frank Sinatra, which is where you and Mr. Chug, in fact, come in for an intersection, or one of many intersections.
Yes, indeed.
Why is Frank in your book, Paul? Pardon me, I haven't seen the book, but I can see two photos of Frank in there. What's going on?
I was writing about, the chapter on Winter Coat, a song of mine, which is always the song that in my mind, you know, in my fantasy world, that Frank Sinatra would do.
Wow.
You know, when I heard Frank Sinatra had done Reminiscing by Little River Band.
Right, right.
I thought, I've got a chance here.
Yeah.
So he never... I never got the song to him, and, you know, obviously it's too late now, but Winter Coat in my mind is a song I would have loved Frank Sinatra to have done. And I was talking to, you know, so anytime I can get, and I love Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, so do I.
I knew Chuggy had toured Frank a few times, I think. So every time I might catch up with Chuggy at a festival or something, I pump him for Frank Sinatra stories.
Yeah, yeah.
And he gave me a story, which he could probably tell better, which I stole for the book.
Well, you can get him to tell it. You can prompt him in a moment. But the CD, the collected works of Paul Kelly CD, will be coming out with the book, How to Make Gravy. It's in the shops now. The CD's soon to follow. And Paul's volunteered to sing another song for us. Tony Martin, who is on TV tonight, A Quiet Word with Bill Bailey airs tonight on ABC TV 1 at 10:05, is my co-host, and Paul's offered to sing us another song as well. And what's it going to be?
Well, I'll sing Winter Coat.
Oh,
the one
perfect.
For Frank, the one for Chuggy. We were lovers once, long ago, walking through cold city streets, like lovers do. Stopped inside a market, we kissed beside a store. Someone said you better move on if you're not buying. Then I saw the winter coat hanging on the rack. I thought about that winter coat hanging on my back. So you helped me try it on. It was just my size. Then you bought that coat for me after haggling over the price. Keeps me warm. Years have come along, years have gone. Some friends have risen, some friends have moved on. My old winter coat still hangs by my front door, holding all the stories I don't remember anymore. When it gets freezing up in these cold, cold hills, I just put on
snow. My winter cold keeps me warm.
Wonderful, and thank you ever so much. Paul Kelly with Winter Coat. How to Make Gravy is the massive book and the CD collected set coming your way again too.
I would love to have heard Frank Sinatra. It would have been fantastic. That yeah. Cuckoo with a coat.
Yeah.
Who's the bride in that coat?
With the coat, Jack.
And we'll get Michael Chuggy's version of that same story in a moment as well when he joins us. 23 to 12 on The Conversation Hour. 23 minutes to 12 on The Conversation Hour. Tony Martin, my co-host, and you can see him on ABC TV tonight with Bill Bailey. Paul Kelly was our first guest, and we've had the absolute privilege of two live songs. And now we're joined by music promoter, entrepreneur, and self-confessed bully, Michael Chugg.
Hi, John, how are you, mate?
Hey, you in the black T-shirt is published by Macmillan Australia, and many confessions in this book, not the least that you regard yourself as having been a bully.
Oh, yeah, there were moments, no doubt about it, you know. Cover up insecurities and all that sort of stuff.
Michael, can I just say, I went to the pardon me, to the ARIA Awards a few times in the 90s, and you would always get up before the broadcast went to air and just frighten everybody.
Yeah, well, that was, you know, Mark Pope would drag me up and get me to do that.
Telling people to make sure you've been to the toilet before the shit, seeing Barnsley going, oops, I better... popping out. It was always as though Lawrence Tierney from Reservoir Dogs had got up on stage to say, my way or the highway.
That's not a bad... I'll remember that one.
You could have done that, Rob.
Why do you feel the need at this point in your life to tell us all these things about yourself?
Well, you know, everybody's been hassling me for 10 years to write a book, and eventually Mark Pope dragged me up to Byron Bay and we spent a week recording. It was very funny. It was... When the whole book thing started, it was, well, if I'm going to do a book, you know, I'm a prolific reader. I read the entire collection of the history of the fall of the Roman Empire before I was 12 years old. I devoured biographies. And I stopped reading bios about 20 years ago because I just got sick and tired of reading fluff pieces. And I thought, well, if I'm going to do this, I need to tell the truth. And
heavily legaled as it is, as you tell us.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad, actually. There were a few things we had to swap around and change, but no, I just thought, you know, let's tell the truth how it really is. I mean, you know, you see all these people go through life and everybody thinks it's all wonderful and groovy and, you know, there's a whole nother story to things, and I just thought I'd like to lay that out for people. And,
well, I salute you for doing so, yeah. And it's an utterly compelling read.
Thank you.
And it does give you the sense of a life very richly lived, despite all the flaws that you're quite happy for us to share in.
Yeah, well, everybody has them, and I think avoiding them is the wrong thing to do. And I think one of the reasons I'm still alive at 63 is that I don't let it get to me, and I don't store all that bad stuff up. You let it out, you know, and be not as honest as you can.
Do you still go to AA?
No, I haven't been to AA for a few years.
Is it still a problem?
No.
How come?
Well, I'm 63, you know, you got to call a halt to it somewhere.
Some don't.
Oh, well, some do. But yeah, you know, it's, hey, you live for the day, you live for the, we'll just roll along.
Well, I salute you. Now, look, Paul was telling us about the Sinatra story, but we can get it firsthand.
Yeah.
So what's your side of that same conversation?
We're talking about the car trip.
I was gobsmacked when you told me about it, him coming from the airport.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we had several instructions. They didn't want to go through customs, which we organised in Melbourne. They did it all in a private room. And he had to have police escort. Motorbikes, and he had to be able to move. So when we got to Sydney, a great friend of ours, Tony Edwards, who now is the head of security at Acer Arena in Sydney, was a police inspector at the time, and he used to moonlight with us on Billy Joel and Bob Dylan and tours like that. And we explained to Tony what we were doing, and Tony got two Commonwealth Copper friends and himself, and they were Frank's security. So we explained we had to get him from the airport to the Intercontinental, and it was peak hour, 6 o'clock at night. So we all jumped in the limos and the vans, and basically went from Mascot to the Intercontinental in just under 15 minutes. And
how?
The outriders are swinging in and out, and one would get to the traffic lights just as they turned green, and we just rolled through. Tony was sitting somewhere in Sydney with all the screens punching up the lights. And we got to the hotel, and Frank got out, and he said, gee, the traffic in Sydney is very light and organised, isn't it? Tony did wear it big time after that, and a few years later he had his photo in the paper looking after Earl McPherson, and Tony's career as a police inspector and a part-time security person went out the window.
Because his photo appeared?
Yeah, because he was getting too famous.
Was that the tour where Frank Sinatra got locked in the hotel?
No, this is long, long time after this. This is 1988.
Oh, right,
and it
right.
was a tour with Sinatra, Minnelli and Davis.
Because they made that movie where Dennis Hopper was Frank Sinatra, and I always thought a better movie about Frank Sinatra in Australia would be, there's an album which is out on Blue Note Records called Frank Sinatra Live at Festival Hall in Melbourne in 1959. With the Red Norvo Quartet. And it's a terrible recording, but it's a great show. Mm. And if you look at the cover of that album, it says Frank Sinatra with the Red Norvo Quintet, it was in fact, plus a local orchestra. But it doesn't say who was in that orchestra. And apparently it was just an orchestra of people from local bands that was corralled together at the last minute. And I've asked Billy Bunnell about that. I'm going, who was in that orchestra? Who were the people who got to play with Frank for two nights at Festival Hall in 1959? That's a movie I'd like to see. Who were those people?
Yeah, we'll put out the call. Maybe you'll get some calls back.
Yeah, you
probably listening.
You undoubtedly will. From Bette Midler to Bob Dylan to Fleetwood Mac, and the story about Fleetwood Mac and the Heineken cans, I mean, Heineken bottle tops, I should say, is one I won't spoil. It's better read in the the paper.
It's pretty incredible.
It is quite incredible. But what's the greatest excess? You tell it as if you've seen every form of excess imaginable. What was the greatest?
Oh, I think, you know, the backstage rider on that Rock Arena tour by Fleetwood Mac's probably the biggest excess I've ever seen. We've never seen it at a medieval tent with the, you know, it actually looked as though you're at a jousting competition or one of those famous old movies with Dick Powell or one of those guys, you know. And the tent was the 50-foot-long table with the king throne and the queen throne and whole cows and pigs and every bread and vegetable imaginable. And, of course, the band never went in there once, did not go in there once. The roadies on that tour all put on weight. Yeah, no, I think that's probably the most excessive thing I've seen. You know, they had mobile gyms and road-cased bikes, and they carried two extra grand pianos. None of that stuff ever got unloaded.
And you were instructed to be in the car park at the airport upon arrival to meet their manager with how many ounces of cocaine?
2 ounces of cocaine, which I didn't know what it was in those days. You'll see in the book that I swore off powders a long time before that, after Lobby Lloyd gave me a purple heart one night in St Kilda, where we all lived at one stage. And I stayed up and talked everybody to death for 3 days. So I figured powders and all that stuff weren't for me. So it was all a bit nerve-wracking, and of course, you know, as the tour went on, if you didn't participate, well, you weren't allowed to be on the tour, so there you go.
You had to go along with it, and the stories, the overall flavour, Michael, that comes from it, sounds strange calling you Michael Chug, the overall flavour that comes out from it is of an industry that has no connection to the people who pay for it. In other words, it's like it's living in its own bubble, totally removed from the real world.
Yeah, yeah. There's a piece in there when I went to Camp Eden in 83 after Rod Muir, my great friend, who we used to call Mad Max, went up there and got his act together. And I went up there and I was there for a month. And what I discovered was that I had totally lost the art of communicating with normal people. And I was living in this bubble, as you say. And it was a bubble. And you know, in the following years, obviously, I've gone out of my way to change that. And I actually, when I, after a couple of weeks up there and I'd gone through the detox and everything, I actually started to enjoy talking to Mr. and Mrs. Normal.
Hmm.
And it was a real eye-opener for how far we'd got involved in this wonderful world of music, and nothing else really counted except football.
How do you keep in touch with the real world, Paul?
Yeah, it's, you're quite right. It is a being on tour is a kind of bubble. It's you go away from home, and all the things, the normal bump of life, you don't have to worry about, just paying the bills or doing the shopping or just, you know, maintaining the house. All you got to do is, you know, get up in the morning, travel to the place, sound check, do your show, and then the next day go to the next place, and you sort of, it's quite. It's just, you sort of, the whole day drives to that one point, and
people catering to your every whim, tugging forelocks, opening doors.
Well, when I'm not quite at that level, I think when you're,
you're
getting
not that
to
far off it, you get looked after, I'm sure. But yet, at the same time, if you're going to be successful, you've got to write songs that reflect the exact opposite kind of world. So. You've got to kind of walk both sides of the line in a way.
Yeah, I mean, it's harder for, I think, for promoters, because that's with Chuggy, that was, you would do tour after tour after tour, but most artists don't. We do a tour, and then we come home, it's always the when you come home from a tour and you're suddenly, oh, God, I've got to go and shop some vegetables, or I've got to go and shop, and, you know, it's not like everybody, you know, is a big fan, so.
I remember reading an interview with Mick Jagger, who said, you know, it's the end of the tour when you get home, shut the door, and you've got to put the rubbish bins out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, for many, many years, you know, in the 70s when I was doing, you know, working with Paul Daney, and you'd be totally engulfed by the abattoir for 6 to 8 weeks of your life, and that's all you would live. And then you'd be at Perth Airport and you'd wave goodbye and there was nothing. That was it. And for many years I'd go into huge depressions after the tours, because it was like part of your life had just been ripped out and thrown away. I'm long past that now, but that's how it used to be.
That's like a drug. You need another fix
and
to keep you going.
Well, you know, there was no mobile phones or internet or anything like that, so it was all a little slower, but it was also very consuming.
And you may have disconnected even more probably without the mobile phones and the emails.
Disconnected totally, and it was very tough on my marriages and my family life.
Which you're very open about as well. Yeah. I presume that's with permission from your kids. And
oh, well, Sophie said she's not going to bother reading it. And Nick dropped me in a couple of times. There's a couple of stories in there I'd forgotten and things. I took Nick on the road a lot when he was young, and that was a mistake that I made with Nick. He just got too close to it all. And it is. It's an unreal world. Fortunately, my second wife, Lisa, was a bit stronger, and Lucas and Sophie take it or leave it, you know. Which is good, but, yeah, it's been an interesting life, and been lots of mistakes, lots of great things. And, you know, it's one of the great things is that we've been able to do wonderful things and give back to the community and help. And I think the karma that comes with all that has helped keep us all alive.
There was an article in the paper on the weekend about all the revival acts or nostalgia acts that were touring the world at the moment. And the list was as long as the page. It was just quite extraordinary.
Hmm.
Is that where we're at in the industry? Everything old is new again?
Yeah, there is a fair bit of that going on. And I've got to say, I went and saw Roger Waters do The Wall in Toronto about 8 days ago. Unbelievable. I saw it, Michael Gudinski and I saw it at Earls Court in 1980. And this was magnificent. And obviously 30 years on, the technology made it even more exciting. But that was fabulous. And some of the older cats that are around right now are making better music than they ever made. But at the same time, there's an amazing amount of young acts like the Kings of Leon and the Muse and Florence and the Machine and people like that who are making unbelievable music and coming through, as there are in Australia. I mean, not many people in Australia realise how big presets and cut copying and temper trap bands like that are becoming overseas. So it's an exciting time.
Don't you find it's weird, though, when there's several different versions of the one band on tour? I was at a radio station in New Zealand in the mid-80s, and in 2 months, we had 3 different versions of the Platters come through town, each with one original member and claiming to be the authentic one. I see Hookie is on tour with doing the Joy Division the Unknown Pleasures album, but it's just him and I think his son on bass. Meanwhile, the other two blokes from New Order are doing their own Joy Division tribute. I mean, I didn't think I would live to see that.
About when Hot Chocolate came out without Errol Brown?
That was pretty. Yeah.
The Supremes touring without
David Ross. At one stage, there were two versions of Yes touring around America.
Good
yeah,
God.
No, it happens.
Yeah.
But there's still. I don't think all the heritage acts. It doesn't seem to be diminishing the new acts. I mean, there seems to be just the live music scene for new music is as strong as it ever was. And so, do you think more people are going out to see?
Generally? Look, I've been saying this for a few years. Since 2000, the potential concert going audience in our country has quadrupled, and that can be seen in the amount of acts that are touring and the amount of sellouts that are happening, and also ACDC, 700,000 people. Robbie Williams, 600,000 people.
Leonard Cohen coming around again, supported by Paul Kelly.
Yeah, well.
And the festivals, you know, that's been something that's grown in the last 5 or 10 years, and people love to go to the festivals.
Every weekend.
The festivals of today are like instantly built cities, and they're wonderful events. In the early 70s with the Sunburys and the Wallaces and all that stuff, you know, people stopped going after a couple of festivals because it was just a shit fight. But today, every amenity you want's there, and more importantly, the music's unbelievable. I mean, you go to a blues fest and you want to go there to see, you know, Buddy Guy or one of those guys, but at the same time, you come away after you've captured and seen bands like Rodrigo y Gabriela and people like that who you've never heard of, and they become your brand new favourite band. So it's a very exciting time.
I wonder, though, if there's a changing of the guard. I mean, here there's you, Gadinski, Molly Meldrum. I'm trying to think of the people, the Suits, who have got...
Suits, I don't know about that word. Suits.
Well, the black T-shirts, you mean?
Call Molly Meldrum a suit? You know, a friend of mine after...
Point taken, but you know what I mean.
Yeah,
the people behind the scenes who... I'm not going to say, it'd be wrong to say you control the industry, but you've got enormous power and influence in the industry. And you're all of a certain age.
Yeah.
Is there another generation coming through?
There is, and they're coming through. They really are. There's some great young kids around, and we have a lot of young people on our team who we let participate in tours and discover acts. And, you know, look, half the time I'll confirm an act I've only just heard about, because my kids have been onto it for a year and a half, you know, in the office. So, yeah, no, they're coming through. I mean, somebody said, I think it was Billy Joel, he said, when we're all dead, there'll be no more rock and roll. Well, he's not quite right.
No.
He's definitely not quite right.
Yeah.
In fact, he's totally wrong.
Yeah. But,
young guys running Meredith Festival and Laneway Festival.
Yeah, Danny Rogers, who I partner in the Laneway Festival, what an amazing character. The kid has got the greatest ears. And, you know, it's like Florence and the Machine, who headlined the Laneway Festival this year with another English band, New York band called Double X. And Florence had sold a couple of albums and she wasn't really that well known. She did the Laneway Festival. She blew everybody away. Three platinum albums later, she came back and did two Melbourne Festival Halls, three Enmores and the Horden Pavilion.
Wow.
You know, and played to 40,000 people. And it's great to be involved and see that coming through. So, yeah, we have a lot of fun with all that, and there are a lot of great young promoters. The Meredith Festival, I believe, sold out again in a day.
Yep.
That's a credit to those
does,
kids.
As they do. What advice, both of you? We've got a rare chance here. Paul Kelly, Michael Chugg, even Tony Martin.
I'll throw in, sure.
Yeah.
What's your question?
What advice do you give to people who are around the edge of success in the industry and wondering how to take that next step to the next level? Paul?
I just, you know, trust your instincts and not worry too much about what people tell you. And never sign a contract without a lawyer present.
Chuggy?
Believe in what you're doing. I always said, you know, that If you keep banging your head against the wall long enough, the wall will fall down. And it does. And, you know, many, many times in the past, I wanted to do stuff and everybody went, no, 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 it won't work, it won't work. And I persevered and persevered and it worked. But if you took the rejection that you get in this industry personally, you wouldn't be in this industry. But you just, you know, I've met some wonderful kids who've come through in a big way. I mean, back in the late, very late 80s and the early 90s, we lost a whole generation of kids who didn't get into music at all. And we were determined never to let that happen again. So, but the amount of kids getting into the industry now is quite exciting. And, of course, they're not going to work at record companies anymore because there's no record companies to work at.
Basically. No, but there's plenty of other places where
that's
you can
exactly
get a toehold.
Right. And you know, some of the smart young kids coming up today are releasing five or six albums on their own little labels and doing the thing. And that's
low overheads or no overheads.
That's exactly how we started back in the 60s. So it really hasn't changed, except you've got the tools and the technology of the modern day world to make it a lot easier.
Tony?
Well, in terms of comedy, I just think what's great now is just anyone can pick up a video camera, film a sketch, put it on YouTube.
That's right.
It's so democratic. The cat that plays the piano is seen by more people than the X Factor. I mean, just get on there. That's what I say.
And you can never win by following.
No.
Stick to what you believe in and what you think is what you want to be doing.
That's right.
Don't sell your soul. Well, couldn't agree with more of you. Of your utterances, all
of
you.
A couple of great books there. I can't wait to read Paul's.
Well, yeah, you're not having my copy, I can promise you.
Have you guys looked each other up in the indexes?
You're both in each other's books. Hey, You in the Black Shirt, which is an endearing title for any book. It's Michael Chugg's story, the real story of touring the world's biggest acts, and it's a ripper of a read. Paul Kelly's encyclopedia, I'll call it, How to Make Gravy, which is nearly 600 pages, and you can pick it up anywhere and read about what motivates Paul Kelly, what gets his juices flowing.
Well, you miss the running gags. If you don't read it in order, you'll miss the running gags.
Yeah, there are plenty of them. In fact, there's some puzzles in there as well. And I've been absolutely privileged to have you both in here and to have you, Paul, performing for us live today. And Tony Martin tonight on the television on ABC TV at 10:05 with Bill Bailey, A Quiet Word with Bill Bailey, the first of an occasional series from a man who wrote an occasional book.
That's right. A Nest of Occasional, still available, not in the bins out the front, I'd like to point out.
Nor in the bins out the back.
No, neither.
And that's been our conversation hour today. You can listen to it on the internet if you've come in late or missed it or you just want to hear it all again. It'll be online sometime mid-afternoon once we get the technology working and you can have a listen through again. And speaking of entrepreneurs, people with wisdom to pass on, all sorts of advice. Richard Stubbs, good morning to you.
Very much so. Yes, good morning.
Well, a lifetime lived.
Yes. Well, it's not over.
No.
So, you know, the story so far, you could say, perhaps.
Do you pass on wisdom other than to your children?
I like to find the young up-and-comers, talk them out of the business.
Yeah. Tell them to go and be an accountant or a lawyer.
Take their best stuff. Explain that it's called an homage. And then talk about them behind their back when they're not around. Just go, nah.
Undermine their career.
Doesn't have the ticker.
Yeah.
You know, on the grog. Nah, no good for you. That's... You know, because it's about surviving.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's how they learn. Lesson.
Or not.
Some of them will get you back and some of them won't.
They might try.
They'll never be heard of again.
Yeah, that's right. Good luck.
It's all in the Dirty Tricks manual.
John Paul Young will know about that. He's coming in. He's going to have a chat. He's doing a new campaign for Hearing Australia. And he's coming in for a chat about things. He's always an interesting person to talk about, too. Rochelle Hunt's... in a state of, I guess, quiet frenzy. She is a mad St Kilda supporter. She's going down to the training today. They've got an afternoon training on. They'll be running around in the hail and the cold, and Rochelle will be there screaming, I love you! I love you! Oh, and back to you, Richard. You know, there'll be a bit of that.
She's got 2 weeks of it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a state of mad and frenzy. I do wish we could have some sort of mascot fight. I do enjoy it when mascots fight. It's just my personal thing. I'm putting it out there.
You've got a couple of days to organise it. Yeah, Richard Stubbs with you on the radio. Paul Kelly, Michael Chugg, Tony Martin. It's been a fabulous hour. Thank you for coming on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria. This has been The Conversation Hour. Sure.